Zaxby's, famous chicken fingers, wings, and salads. Stop by your neighborhood Zaxby's today.
From between the hedges at Sanford Stadium to the practice fields, from Stegman Coliseum and wherever else the Bulldogs are playing, it's time to talk Georgia sports.
Touchdown, Dogs win it!
From the Athens Banner-Herald, here are your hosts, Mark Weiser and Ryan Dennis.
Welcome in. We are ready to hit the road to Knoxville for Georgia's first of, what is it, seven straight SEC games? It must be right. They played Vandy. You end the season with Georgia Tech. So
haven't played another, haven't you?
That's a lot of SEC football coming your way with the Bulldogs. But Tennessee is on the schedule Saturday night in Knoxville. A lot going on with Jeremy Pruitt's program. Police audio tapes with the coach talking about an arrest warrant.
That's not football related, really. That's never good.
Philip Fulmer came out yesterday. He's the athletic director now, the former national championship football coach of the Vols. He said, no, he will not be coaching again. So, Ryan, do you believe him, or will this be another Barry Alvarez situation where they need a coach and he will step out of the AD's box and put on the headsets and become the coach again in all his glorious orange?
I'm going to believe him this time. I mean, you got a lot of guys on the staff I think could move up into Pruitt's role should he be fired. But I don't know. It's becoming a bad situation around Knoxville, on and off the field.
All right, just another week on Rocky Top. We actually had some drama like this in Athens back when Jeremy Pruitt was on the coaching staff. I remember Jeremy Pruitt did a lot to change the culture at Georgia.
He did, absolutely.
And we wrote about that a lot last year when Pruitt and the Vols came here, talked to people on that team in 14 and 15 that credited him with, you know, kind of putting the Alabama imprint on the program, but he also ruffled a lot of feathers. We don't need to go over it like over and over again. We've written
well,
it, but
a couple things.
But my point is, there was one day in particular where there were rumors that Pruitt had been fired, and
there was a tweet right from Mark Rick.
So I'm over at the butt smear in the hallway outside the football offices, which are on total lockdown all the time, so it's not like we can go check if Pruitt's in there. But Claude Felton, the SID, I believe, I was checking with him, and then Rick tweeted out that Jeremy Pruitt was in his office.
Yeah.
I think it was getting ready for Kentucky or something like that. So there can be some drama. So, hey, did I mention we're going to have Patrick Brown of GoVols 247 coming on to fill us in on what's happening at Tennessee? I think we're going to kind of stick to football. Probably won't talk about those things that popped up, but we'll talk about the Pruitt situation, and also we'll also make our picks in the Wiser Than Wiser contest. I just want to say for the record, I did not name that, but
yeah, that was all me, man.
You named that?
I liked it. It was it was illiterate. One. Your name is Wiser. So it all just kind of came together to me. I thought it was great. Figured you'd be all behind it.
How about crying with Ryan?
Yeah, I am crying with my picks. I think I am at the bottom of the heap. My name doesn't even show up on the top leaderboard of like 75.
Oh, I haven't seen the leaderboard.
You're tied for like fifth.
Yeah.
I'm awful.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, there's a whole leaderboard you can scroll down like 1 through 75.
Yeah, I don't see my name. I mean, it's awful.
Georgia favored by 24.5. They are trending down a half point, which means they were favored by 25 week.
Yeah, Vegas is happy then.
Just kind of a little refresher, and I forgot about it, so I pulled up my game story from last year's game. It was 24-12. Now, this was not a great Tennessee team last year. It was a very good SEC East Division champion Bulldogs. Not the same as 17, but it was 24-12 in the fourth quarter. Georgia had a pretty choppy first half, 3 first downs, 68 total yards, gave up a pair of big play touchdowns in the second half. And Jake Fromm after the game said, sometimes games are really physical, and that's what we had today. He said it was a body blow day and ground and pound. So is that 24.5 points? Are you expecting this to be a similar type deal where, like Notre Dame, Georgia has to kind of you know, claw their way to a victory.
No, it will not be like Notre Dame.
All right, just give you a chance to kind of throw it out there.
No, I think 24.5 sounds right. Didn't we talk about this like when the original line came? Or no, we were.
Maybe we did.
It was before the line would come out. We were like, it'd be around 20. And I think I was like, it might be a little more than that. That seems right to me, that 24.5,
the line 25. The line came out Sunday. We probably talked about it on our Monday podcast, which for some reason didn't get posted until Tuesday. I mean, it must be a busy week.
Don't be that guy. But yeah, it's up and you can listen to it. But yeah, I think 24.5 seems right. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if it was like 2 years ago and it was 41-0. I mean, Georgia. Yeah, I mean, Georgia coming off a bye week. They're so much better than Tennessee is talent-wise. Tennessee's had all that issues you've been talking about with Pruitt and Fulmer and all that off the field. And, I mean, this just seems like a mismatch of epic proportions.
Epic proportions.
You like that?
All right, last year's game, again, one more time. Justin Fields.
Who?
15-yard touchdown run, 12-yard touchdown run. 45 rushing yards. No, 145. But the reason I bring up Justin Fields, that was probably one of his better games, I would imagine, for the Bulldogs. Kirby Smart sidestepped a question this week about Justin Fields and Jacob Eason. It was the off week Georgia's coming off of. But Kirby said that he was kind of focused on watching SEC games. He said he saw some highlights, but he did not want to go there. He didn't want to kind of break down. Now, obviously, if there's a playoff matchup with Ohio State, I imagine Kirby's going to be a lot more detailed about what he sees from Fields. But I think we can pretty much – I haven't asked him, really. I don't think I've asked him at all about Fields. But he's gotten the question like three times, I believe, since August. He's not going to go there.
No, he's not. I mean, why would it be dumb of him, too, I do believe. I mean, he's not going to – I don't think he's he highly favors at least Fields, I don't think, for the way he kind of left. I think the Easton deal was kind of everybody saw that coming. It made a lot of sense. But
obviously, the circumstances, and it's not – Ohio State's not putting it out there. Justin Fields' lawyer's not putting it out there. Exactly what they used to get their waiver. But you can't blame Justin Fields for wanting to go be a starting quarterback because that clearly wasn't happening at Georgia.
Succeeding right now. I wrote a little column this week for Game Day. Check it out on Saturday about how Fromm kind of gets no respect, but a lot of it has to do with the fact that Fields is putting up incredible numbers. You saw all that last week about Fields, and somebody on Twitter said that can't believe we're not talking about how much better Fields is than Jake Fromm right now and all that type of stuff. So it was just which he is putting up. I think he's got 17 touchdowns to no interceptions so far. But the matter of fact is that they're obviously playing different types of schemes, different types of opponents. Jake Fromm didn't even make it to the second half of two of those games, I don't believe, earlier this year. So, the numbers are skewed a little bit. But all I know is that he keeps on winning. So that'll be kind of the premise of my column in Saturday's Game Day.
Where would one find that Game Day section?
They could find it in the Saturday issue of the Athens
Right,
Banner
Herald. Is that at your local supermarket?
I'm sure it will be. You can find it there, convenience stores. I think there's still some boxes around. You can have it sent to your house even.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's a cool little new feature of newspapers.
I was just curious because I know Ohio State has not – obviously I look at these games and scores. I put up my AP Top 25 ballot. I got it submitted every Sunday by about 11 a.m., I think it is. I moved Ohio State up to fourth this week, and I flopped Clemson and Alabama.
So you didn't move – I figured some people might move Georgia ahead of Clemson, too, with that poor show.
I did not. They were off.
Not many did. I mean, I guess Georgia got
they got some first place. So
which kind of surprised me in a sense.
But here's my point is that they hadn't played a world-beater schedule. Nebraska lost to Colorado, and they got crushed by Ohio State.
FIU was on their schedule.
Cincinnati's a decent team, and they blew them out. So they got Michigan State this week, Northwestern. Then it gets interesting, Wisconsin.
Oh, that'll be a good one. I bet that's a prime
Penn State
Game Day matchup.
And then Michigan. So we'll see. I mean, that's not in that order, but those are some of the teams remaining on the schedule. Enough about Justin Fields. I'm sure Georgia fans want to hear more about this Georgia-Tennessee matchup, and we will get to that after we remind you that don't forget to shoot us a review at the Apple Podcast Store. Is it a store?
It's just Apple Podcasts.
Apple Podcasts. Or the Google Podcast app.
Find us wherever you listen to it on your Android as well. I'm sure it's out there.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
I guess.
I was going to say Ryan would like you to give a good review. Now,
well,
look, I'm not going to say do a 5-star review Because if you feel we deserve 4 stars or even 2 stars, you can go ahead and do that.
Leave us a comment, though, please. And
I mean, I wouldn't recommend you give us 2 stars. It would kind of hurt Ryan's feelings.
It would. But, hey, also, you know, there's a little button that says subscribe, and you can just get us flying into your phone whenever I post this, which will be just a little bit. We're on a, what is it, Thursday around noon? So this should be...
It's around there, yeah.
So, you know, give us a couple hours after this, and it should fly right into your phone if you're subscribed.
All right, we appreciate that. Thanks for tuning in each week. This is the Bulldogs Extra Podcast, presented by Zaxby's. All right, joining us now is Patrick Brown of Vols 247 to talk Georgia, Tennessee with a little bit of a Vols angle to it. Patrick, how's it going?
Going well, Mark. How are y'all today?
We're good. Looking forward to our drive through the mountains to get to Knoxville. Tennessee, like Georgia, has had 2 weeks to get ready for this one after a 34-3 loss at Florida. What's the mood right now there with this team, this fan base?
Well, I think the team probably has a better mood than the fan base. I don't think anybody legitimately expected Tennessee to be 1-3 going into this game. Going into this stretch of the schedule, Tennessee will play Mississippi State next week, and they got to go to Alabama. So it could get worse before it gets better. I mean, I think it could be Mississippi State. I don't know that those Bulldogs have necessarily been world beaters, but certainly Georgia and Alabama, those look like tall tasks, and they'll be tall tasks for a lot of teams this season. But, yeah, I think a lot of people are in terms of the fan base, are upset and mad that they're 1-3. It's not where, you know, a lot of people were hoping where Jeremy Pruitt and this program would start showing some signs of progress in the second season. And while internally there might be some belief that they are still going in the right direction, I mean, when you're 1-3, it's kind of hard to sell that. And Pruitt has been blunt about it this week. He was asked, I think, on Monday about how he would evaluate the coaching staff, and he said, "Hey, we're 1-3. It's what our record is. So, and our record is what." You know, it's what we are. So, but they can't really do anything about that now. And now it's just kind of about salvaging the season. And certainly coming out of an open date last season, Tennessee won at Auburn. So I don't know that that's going to happen again. But certainly you would think that they will play better maybe than they have in the first 4 games of the season, having a couple, having an extra week to get ready for Georgia.
Hey, Patrick, thanks again for joining us here on our podcast. And you said 1-3 several times, that one being over Chattanooga and losses, of course, to Georgia State and BYU. But, you know, if you look ahead, you mentioned Mississippi State, and you got South Carolina, UAB, Kentucky, Vandy. I mean, if they win all those, there could be a bowl on the horizon. Is there a realistic inkling of that happening this year?
I don't know about how realistic it is. But, yeah, I mean, it's... You know, we always go into season thinking these games are going to be tough. These games will be easier. These games are toss-up games. And, I mean, I don't think Tennessee's looked great at, really at any point of this season. But certainly what we've seen from the team you mentioned, Mississippi State's got a couple losses. Kentucky's not been good. South Carolina's, until last week when they beat Kentucky, has been kind of up and down. Vanderbilt doesn't look very good either. Those are games that Tennessee can win. I don't know if they will. They obviously need to get better in a lot of areas, namely at the quarterback position, if they're going to win all of those games. But there is a path, I think, to maybe getting to 6 wins. It would be, I don't want to say remarkable, but it would be quite the accomplishment given kind of where they are going to be, which is after Saturday night, likely 1-4. So, yeah, I mean, they have a chance. They have some games that you know, they get South Carolina and Mississippi State both at home. You know, Kentucky's the team that they beat last year that Tennessee doesn't really, you know, they kind of have Kentucky's number at this point, even though Kentucky has won a couple in the last 10 seasons or so. But, yeah, I mean, I don't know how realistic it is, but I look at some of those games against those teams you mentioned, and I don't think that Tennessee goes to those games and there's no chance of them winning that. This game Saturday night falls into that particular category, and so does Alabama, and I don't think they could beat Missouri either.
Jarrett Garantano has more than 20 starts as Tennessee's quarterback. Was pulled to start the second half of the Florida game, returned later in that game, throwing more interceptions than normal. Does Tennessee stick with him or turn to freshman quarterback Brian Maurer?
As of the time we're recording this, I don't know for sure. My inkling and my hunch this week has been that they're going to play both in some sort of combination. I don't know if Fantana starts and they bring Maurer in. I don't know if Maurer starts and they bring Fantana in. Jeremy Pruitt even said on his radio show the night that they can play all three guys, and their third guy is JT Shrout, who's a redshirt freshman that has only played one game in his career. So that might be a little bit of gamesmanship, but behind the scenes, there are some people that think Maurer will start or potentially play a lot. He's sort of a different – he could be used as a change of pace guy because he can run a little bit. He can bring some of the zone read kind of element to the offense. And frankly, Tennessee's had an extra week to sort of get him ready. So if you were going to make a change and either start Maurer or expand his role, it would be, on one hand, it would be the ideal time to do it because you have an extra week. On the other hand, it would not be an ideal time to do it because you're playing a Georgia defense that's been really, really good this season. So I don't know if you want to throw your freshman to the wolves and see what happens. But, yeah, there's no doubt that that's the biggest question mark for moving forward, not only maybe this season but beyond, is what happens to the quarterback position. It's the most important position on the field, and Tennessee hasn't gotten good play out of it in all three of their losses. Again, Fantano has regressed from last season. I don't know if he was ever necessarily a world beater, but there were expectations that he could be better and could build upon some of the good things he did last year with Jim Chaney coming in, with Chris Winkie taking over the quarterback coaching. And it's just not been that's just not happened to this point, and Tennessee struggled with turnovers. I think they have as many interceptions this season in four games, and they threw all of last season. Gary Tanner only had three all of last season, so they've not gotten good play there. And I don't think Pruitt was very secretive in saying that during their opening they need to open it up, and we'll just kind of have to see how they go about it on Saturday night, but. I'm under the impression that Maurer is going to be involved in some sort of capacity as they try to look to kind of spark this offense and get it going.
All right, Patrick, you mentioned Jim Chaney, of course, a guy familiar, you know, around here. I know there's a lot of talk this past week to Georgia players about how much they would know about him or he would know about the Georgia defense. But what have you seen out of Chaney? Do you think it's taken some time for them to adjust? Could that be the turnover issue maybe, or – you know, how do you think he's done with the offense so far?
Well, I would say it's sort of mixed at this point. I think Chaney's done some good things. I think he's drawn up some good plays to get some guys open, and they just haven't hit them. I mean, Florida game 2 weeks ago, they go in empty set, have a tight end out of the slot running down the seam. Nobody's within 10 yards of them, and the quarterback just misses them. I mean, they had guys running open quite a bit against BYU, and Jerry Gantano either just didn't see him or was late on the throw. Or didn't look at that side of the field, and just Chaney can go and draw up and get guys open and put good guys create opportunities for them to make explosive plays, but he can't go out there and throw the ball and see the field and do all that stuff. So, but again, that is what he's paid to get his quarterback to play well. So it's a little bit of a mixed review so far. I still think they're trying to figure out what they are on offense because. I think they're still kind of a work in progress in terms of being able to run the ball consistently. But, they run for 250-something yards on BYU, but then against Georgia State, against Florida, they didn't even really try to establish the run game very much. And on one hand, that makes sense because the strength of this offense is some of the wide receivers they have with Juwan Jennings, Marquez Callaway, and Josh Palmer. But it's hard to lean on those guys too much when your quarterback is not playing with a lot of confidence and turning the ball over and making bad decisions and missing throws and all that kind of stuff. So, on one hand, it's hard to say that we've really gotten to see what Chaney wants to do and what he can do. But on the other hand, maybe part of the offense, the struggles with this offense are on him, that they he needs to have call plays that his guys can execute and put them in better opportunities and better chances to be successful than they have been.
Jeremy Pruitt drew criticism from the likes of Eric Murray and David Pollack after his hire. It's been about a season and a half as he's been the head coach there. You think folks are wishing that Greg Schiano or Mike Leach were coaching, or is this just quite a rebuild and a culture change?
Well, you always have your fans and every fan base that are a little bit more extreme than others. I don't know if anybody wants Schiano. I don't know if anybody's missing him. There was this stretch where I think Washington State won their first two or three games, and people were saying, hey, we, you know, get ahead, Mike Leach. You know, since they just lost to Georgia State, so they probably would have taken anybody else at that point. I think Washington State's lost their last two games. So that chatter has sort of gone away. And I think some people have, you know, a lot of people have come to the reality that, yeah, I mean, this was never going to be an easy pick. I know a lot of there's a lot of examples of coaches that have gone on to be successful kind of having breakthrough second season. Certainly that was the situation with Kirby Smart at Georgia, taking over from Mark Richt. They kind of was 8-5 their first year, lost to Vanderbilt, lost some other close games that season. But then the second year is when Smart really kind of they kind of built their identity on what they wanted to be, and then since then they've really played to it and sort of built on it. Now they've got Georgia's got that program up and humming alongside Clemson, Alabama's, and maybe Ohio State too as the best in college football. But yeah, I mean, you look at this Tennessee situation. I mean, a lot of their better players are freshmen. I mean, they've got freshmen playing on starting on both sides of the ball. Some of them are starting when maybe they wouldn't be ready or wouldn't be needed to be counted on otherwise. And certainly there's a lot of other programs that are playing a lot of freshmen too. But in a lot of those situations, they have sort of a core group of upperclassmen that have been in the program for 2, 3, and 4 years that under the same coaching staff that, you know, they've kind of been developed and coached up and they know the system and all these things. And Tennessee's just not to that point yet. You know, I've had a lot of attrition in the 2016 and 2017 classes that were signed before Pruitt got there. There wasn't a whole lot of talent. There were some good, you know, there's some solid players in those groups, but there's been a lot of attrition from those classes, and that sort of saps some of the depth, and they're still trying to kind of build the roster at this point. And so, but yeah, I mean, I don't, you know, through 16 games of Pruitt's career, yeah, I mean, there's obviously some question marks. I don't know how much different things would be had they just beaten Georgia State. I don't know that they would be as much angst. I think that was a real that was sort of an alarm bell sounding kind of loss. The way that one went down, it's probably one of Tennessee's worst losses in the history of the program. But they've still got 8 games left to try to salvage the season, and I don't think anybody thought this would be a quick turnaround. Given what Pruitt inherited in terms of the roster and the culture and just how much Tennessee has lost over the past decade, I think that's something that he's having to dig his way out of. And certainly, if you're Tennessee, you're hoping to see more progress over the rest of this season after the rough start.
Of course, you mentioned the fan base. I'm sure they're down with it, how everything's gone so far this year and all. Of course, Georgia's fan base, you know, Notre Dame a couple of years ago, they all showed up there, took over about half the stadium. I think Vanderbilt, when we were up there earlier this year, it seemed like it was about 3/4 full. And I know a lot of them are planning to go to Knoxville this weekend. What are you expecting as far as the Tennessee turnout compared to Georgia turnout? You know, what are you expecting the crowd to be like?
I think it'll be close to maybe a takeover, but not quite a takeover. I mean, it's still a Tennessee game at night, and I said this earlier this week, I don't know how many more night games Tennessee's going to have. Huh. Mississippi State game is going to be at noon. Might be a lot of 4 o'clock and noon kicks. Just Tennessee's record isn't very good, and this is their biggest home game of the season. So, yeah, I mean, I think there'll be a lot of Georgia fans. I don't know if it'll be maybe a takeover as much as maybe the two games you mentioned, but there'll be a lot of red and black in the stands. And if Tennessee can keep their crowd in the game for a while, it could be a pretty fun atmosphere for everybody. But how long that happens, I don't know. I think they probably will get to a point even where Georgia's talent and the advantages they have at some key spots, or we'll just sort of tell. But yeah, it's a night game. I'm sure there'll be a lot of Georgia fans there. But you know, Tennessee fans showed up in numbers after the Georgia State loss, and the BYU game was a pretty good atmosphere, and that was a night game too. You had a lot of fans. Because that was obviously a unique game for that base. I would expect it to be similar. And like I said, if Tennessee can keep their crowd in the game and give them a reason to be in the game and not, you know, be down 14-0 after the first quarter, then it could be a fun atmosphere for everybody.
Georgia's has a banged up secondary, maybe down Tyson Campbell, one of their starting cornerbacks, with a injury. Do you think Tennessee will try to attack that? And is that one of the keys? What do you see as key for Tennessee keeping this game close?
Well, I think in terms of keeping the game close, they have to come up with some turnovers. It probably have to be multiple turnovers ahead in the turnover margin. And if the Vols can turn one of those turnovers into a touchdown, that would probably be more ideal given the way the offense is played. But, yeah, I mean, that, you know, Tennessee's got some playmakers on offense in the passing game. They've got those three receivers that I mentioned. That'll be tough matchups. The problem that Tennessee's run into this season, and I don't know how Georgia will play, I'm sure they've seen this too, the Tennessee's played come up against a lot of zones, a lot of zone coverage. A lot of teams have been dropping 7 and 8 into coverage. When Tennessee won at Auburn last year, Auburn played a lot of man. They brought extra pressure, and Tennessee was able on that particular day to win a lot of those one-on-one matches on the outside with those wide receivers. A lot of jump balls, a lot of 50-50 balls, a lot of downfield shots. And they haven't really gotten that many opportunities against both sides of coverages this season. I mean, Georgia State basically said, we're not going to let you hit a bunch of big plays on us. BYU was in cover three much of the game. And even Florida, even with Todd Grantham, who I guess, you know, is known for being wanting to be aggressive and bring pressure, they didn't really blitz that much. And they did a lot of rushing four and dropping seven, playing two deep safeties over the top. And what it's done is it's made Jarrett Garantano go through his reads, go through his progressions, and it's a lot of times it's produced him throwing into coverage, double and triple coverage. He's had to check the ball down to receivers, and then you've got two guys out there to make the tackle. Or he's held the ball and not, you know, kind of been indecisive and then tried to run too soon or held the ball too long and taken sacks that way. So that's been a problem, and obviously the big question for Tennessee's offense game is what kind of production, if any, are they going to get from the quarterback position? It's completely unknown. But you know, there's not a whole lot of reason to have a lot of faith in either Garantano or Brian Maurer, just because I don't think is ready yet. I think he could maybe give you some spark and give you maybe a few plays here and there, but over the length of a game, he's going to probably do more, maybe make more mistakes than he makes good plays. He's a confident guy that'll, you know, feel like he's got a little bit of a gunslinger kind of backyard football mentality, likes to run around and make throws that way. But it's the quarterback problems have sort of stunted some of the potential advantages Tennessee could have, namely with those wide receivers, namely with the tight end like Dominic Wood Anderson. I'm sure Tennessee's seen what Notre Dame's tight end did against Georgia, and he had a pretty good game. That would be an area that Tennessee maybe could exploit, but. And with their running backs, too, they have a couple of running backs in Ty Chandler and Eric Gray that can catch the ball in the backfield and sort of be matchup problems. But all that has not really kind of transpired because they've had issues making the simple throws and hitting open guys and making the easy reads from the quarterback position. And until they get that somehow one way or the other, then those potential advantages are going to continue to be kind of muted and this offense will kind of be stuck in neutral.
All right, we will see you Saturday night in Neyland Stadium. Patrick, we appreciate you jumping on here.
No problem. Y'all have safe travels coming up.
All right, thanks. All right, thanks, Patrick, for joining us. This is Mark Weiser with Brian Dennis from the Athens Banner Herald and online Athens, and this is the Bulldogs Extra Podcast presented by Zaxby's. Brian, you wrote a column this week on the Fair Pay to Play Act in California. A splashy bill signing this week by California Governor Gavin Newsom, SB 206, and this would allow payment for name, image, and likeness to college athletes. He signed it on LeBron James' Barbershop Show. What is that on anyway? Is that HBO?
I have no clue. Is that is it internet only?
Might be an HBO deal. I don't know. I haven't watched it. But I think there was a deal, actually, totally getting off subject. Didn't Alabama and Saban and LeBron James, when they're a little back and forth about the they had the similar type of show?
Right.
Totally off topic. This will take effect in 2023. There are similar bills in several states in the pipeline, including in Florida. And Kirby Smart was asked about it by, I believe, Ryan Dennis, who he has a podcast of some sort.
Wiser than Wiser picks, too.
That's the same as podcast. Anyway, Kirby Smart, kind of what he would do on a lot of controversial subjects, he deferred to SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey, which is what he did as well when he was asked about whether the SEC should go to 9 conference games in the last week or two. Nick Saban, who was on a bye week this week, said he didn't know enough about it to comment and was focused on his season.
I believe Gus Malzahn, too, was asked and deferred it to Sankey as well. Yes.
All right, I wrote about this subject in the summer. You wrote about it this week. NCAA has a working group that Georgia President Jerry Moorhead is on that's supposed to come up with steps it will take to address this issue, I believe, later this month.
Yes.
What is your take on this? I think, that's the way that popular opinion's going for the most part. In case you haven't noticed this, there's not much agreement on both sides of the aisle between Democrats and Republicans on many things, but they do seem to be people of both persuasions, both the left and the right, who think that players should be able to get a piece of the billion-dollar industry that is college athletics by having not necessarily schools pay them, but having businesses pay them, or have people that want to, have their services. If you're a top-level swimmer, maybe a top-level swimmer could give lessons at a local Y and get, $500 for a weekly lesson or three. I don't know.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think something I wrote about in my column is a couple years ago, and I think there must have been backlash to this because I hadn't seen it since, but I walked into the bookstore, and game-used jerseys and helmets were on sale in there.
Recently?
That's what I said. I think it was a couple years ago, and I don't know that I've seen it since, and I guess I need to walk back in there, but it just seemed odd to me that these jerseys and helmets that were used by players were being sold in the bookstore, and you knew that money wasn't going to the player that used it. The same I wrote about, A.J. Green. What did he sell his Liberty Bowl jersey a couple years ago? And then
Independence Bowl?
Maybe one of those.
Independence Bowl.
One of those bad bowls. But, it's his jersey, and he sold it, and then gets punished because he sold it. So little things like that just baffle me because, it's the player's property, essentially, and same with autographs. Todd Gurley, he did autographs. I know he knows that he shouldn't have, but that's why the rules should be changed to at least allow them to do that. Now, I've gotten an email or two about, it's just going to turn into only star players getting that benefit, and, little people will be left out, and, what other sports will it affect, really? I mean, you think just major college football, major college basketball. But like you said, maybe a swimmer how about a softball lesson could be, paid for. But I think the main concern is that it's just going to turn into professionalism. But, it's not going to be like that because I guess the money's not coming directly from what the school brings in. But the fact that the school can benefit off of, using their brand, so to speak, to make money is something that they use the players to do that. And the players don't get money back for that. So it would kind of at least trickle down in a sense, I guess, to the players, which would be good.
So if we're talking 2023, let's say that it's 2022 or something. Let's say the NCAA comes up with that timeline. Would 2020 running back commitment Kendall Milton from California, will he be in an ad for a local car dealer, during his sophomore season? Will he, the next Anthony Edwards, if Tom Crean can get one, would he be getting $1,000 for showing up at, you could just be signing autographs for a bunch of people. He could do basketball lessons or maybe even Nike can sign him to a contract, not when he turns pro. Maybe he can do it before he plays his first Georgia game.
But that's the thing I think that's concerning for people is that, doesn't the bill also include that they can't get a sponsorship outside of the schools like Georgia's a Nike school. So Anthony Edwards couldn't go with Adidas, and use them as a sponsor.
Okay.
Yeah, I believe that's part of it. So, I guess that's the fear is that, especially with the way that these big shoe companies are influencing college basketball, is that they're just going to own where these kids go because of the products that these certain schools use.
That kind of goes on already.
That's what I'm saying, though. I know. But I think they're trying to get away from that. But in a sense, I mean, it's just going to make that even
all right,
tougher.
We will. This is a subject that will be around, so I'm sure we'll dive into it again down the road. Let's touch on a couple other Georgia football related topics before we get to our picks. Jay Camarda had a couple of bad punts against Notre Dame. Is his punting average still about 2 yards ahead of where it was last year?
That's the thing about it. You know, it's like,
it's boom or bust.
When it's crunch time, it seems like that's when he seems to falter.
So they got a couple walk-ons on the roster that Kirby says have been rolling in with the ones. You know, how much he's really getting pushed, I would suspect you'd still see Jay Camarda. I don't think you want to throw out a dude for his first time, you know, at a Saturday night game before 90,000 in Knoxville or whatever the number might be. So I would guess Camarda will be there. And also, Kirby said after that Notre Dame game, I think you might have asked him just about the amount of confidence he still has in him. So, you know, you want to boost a guy up and you know, he's still got a big leg. So probably would guess it would be him just because you don't really have that many other options.
Yeah, I know. And I mean, we've seen him crush some punts and his average is high, but he's just, I think my question was, does he get in his own head sometimes or something like that? Or is it mental? Because, I mean, when it was time to make a good punt against Notre Dame, he definitely didn't come through.
All right, I mentioned to Patrick that Tyson Campbell looks doubtful. Started quarterback, so DJ Daniel likely. Maybe Tyreek Stevenson gets thrown in there, but probably Daniel would be the dude again.
And I'd say they both played well against Notre Dame, wouldn't you?
When you say both, who are you talking about?
Daniel and Stevenson.
I don't know if Stevenson was. It was Tyreek.
I guess it was McGee one that played more.
And
he got a touchdown on him.
He got pulled for Stokes, who came back.
Yeah, that's true.
Late in that game and has been at practice. Now, a practice, seems to be the case most weeks, was closed down on Wednesday, so we don't really have the full injury update. But Salmon Kinley, indications are that he probably won't start, at least. Maybe it's a situation like it was with Isaiah Wilson last week where, you know, they don't use him until they need to, which seemed to be the case in the second half against Notre Dame with Thomas. So we'll see with Kinley. He's got that lower leg injury. All right, let's get to our picks. First, congrats to last week's winner, Millie Shelnut of Monroe, who apparently had more than Ryan and myself and won the whole week.
So she won a $100 prize pack from the Athens Banner-Herald. Congrats.
All right, let's make these picks. UCF is at Cincinnati, and I mentioned Cincinnati earlier, 42-0 loss to Ohio State. UCF is, where are they? I think they're a top 20 team still. I'm going with Cincinnati. I think that they want to have a little fight back. They're a good team that needs this would be a big win for them at home, and I think they get it.
I think I picked UCF. Didn't really have any logic behind it, but they lost to Pittsburgh earlier this year, I think. But I'm going to pick the Golden Knights.
Boston College is at Louisville, and BC had a bad home loss to Kansas a few weeks ago. I'm going to take BC going on the road. Surprising with a traditional ACC matchup through the years of Boston College at Louisville. That's what expansion has done. He's given you BC at Louisville.
Yeah, I think I went the other way. Went with Louisville being at home. Seemed like equal teams, so give me the Cardinals.
Tulane is at Army, and Willie Fritz doing some good work, the former Georgia Southern coach at Tulane. And I'm going to say they're going to go to West Point and pull the win.
It kind of surprised me you picked Tulane. I know they had a big win over Houston with a couple little trick plays on their final drive that pulled out the win. But, I mean, I think Army is a good team. They took Michigan. I guess that's not a good example, but took Michigan down to the wire and have played pretty well in other games since. So I'm going to go with Army at home.
All right, Baylor's at Kansas State, and I was on the K-State bandwagon for a while, but I'm off now. I'm going with Baylor to pull the win in Manhattan, Kansas.
I don't feel as confident about that as you, so I'm going to stick with K-State pulling out the victory.
Mel Tucker's Colorado Buffaloes are home against Arizona, and Arizona's coach is who? Former NFL and ESPN commentator?
I thought they had the former
coach. Oh, wait a second. I'm getting my Arizona's wrong. That's Arizona State. Yeah. Oh, boy. This Texas is Texas A&M's former coach.
Yeah.
And that might be one of the reasons why I'm going with Colorado. And Mel Tucker, I was way off on that.
Yeah, I stuck with Colorado, too. You know,
I always get that, yeah.
That high elevation, you know. Nah, I don't know why, but Colorado at home sounded like a good pick.
I was at Michigan, and Jim Harbaugh, by the way, I saw a press conference clip when Jim Harbaugh was not wearing his hat, and I thought that's what he always does. So,
what about khakis?
It was just kind of from the shirt up.
Okay.
So I don't know what he was wearing. Maybe he was wearing shorts. Could be. Michigan had a big win last week, probably against, was it against Rutgers? Oh, yeah, they got their coach fired. Not a big deal. Yeah. But I think Michigan will hold the fort at home against Iowa.
Nope. Iowa's coming in, going to win pretty easily.
Northwestern at Nebraska. I think Nebraska is going to come out fighting after getting embarrassed at home against Ohio State. So I'm going to take Cornhuskers.
You know what? I didn't write it down. I don't even remember who I picked in this one.
Great. Hey, pick up the Saturday paper and you can see who I picked.
But I think I stuck with Nebraska.
All right. Air Force is at Navy. This is a... salute to the Armed Forces game for us here on the podcast, and
they have a don't they have an Armed Forces trophy or something like that at the end of the year after they all play each other?
I believe that might be true. I mean, so much focus is just on that Army Navy game. Uh-huh. I'm gonna take Air Force going to Annapolis and pulling it out.
What does this be, about a 2.5 hour game? I mean, don't they just run the option like crazy? And should be quick, but I mean, Navy at home, why not? Give me Navy.
I'm taking a lot of road teams this week, I've noticed.
I see that. A lot of upsets, I think.
Not at TCU, Iowa State. I'm taking the Cyclones at home. Iowa State used to have a bunch of kids from this area. I don't know if they still do.
Well, they had Ben Nolan there for a little while, at quarterback, who was from Oconee County, but I think he's since gone somewhere else.
Right. And also, they had the former Georgia quarterback.
Was that? That wasn't Logan. No.
It was the dude from New I think he had a Brooklyn. Wasn't Fatan, obviously. Anyway. Give me Iowa State.
Yeah, I mean, Iowa State at home. Again, even matchup, it seemed like. So, give me the home team.
All right, my road picks are going to continue with Pitt at Duke. Duke is coming off a blowout win against Virginia Tech, so I think they're going to be a little bit high on themselves. And Pittsburgh is going to go to Duke and pull out another classic ACC win.
Man, you and the upsets this week. This has a feeling like it's going to be boom or bust for you. Like
These aren't ranked teams I'm picking to lose.
Well, I know, but I mean, if you cash in on some of these, I think you could have a huge week.
Speaking of upsets, we're gonna give you our Georgia Tennessee pick. Look, Tennessee might be a 24.5 point.
I picked Duke, by the way, on the previous one.
Oh, I thought you told me.
No,
Tennessee might be a 24.5 point favorite, but as Ryan says, I'm picking upsets. So here it is, Georgia will win, but you know, I don't think they're going to cover. I think they'll win by like 21. I think Georgia is fine, just kind of, you know, winning, going home with the road victory without putting up like 55. They don't have to. They can milk the clock late. I know you don't want to see that necessarily, but I think Georgia's going to win mainly because Tennessee's quarterback situation is in flux, and I think you know, Georgia can make some big plays early, and Tennessee's confidence. Plus, they have some linebackers at Tennessee. They're counting on a lot of young guys on that team, in particular at linebacker. I think Georgia could have some mismatches with running backs out of the backfield, with tight ends, maybe Eli Wolf on his homecoming. Check out Game Day. We got a story this week on Cade Mays and Eli Wolf both returning to Knoxville.
That'd be a good headline, Return Game.
I did come up with that headline.
There you go.
All right, what about you, Ron? Who are you taking?
Georgia. And give me them and the points and all that stuff, and it's going to be a blowout victory. I mean, there's no way they can – these two teams are comparable at all, and I just feel like Georgia's going to dominate from the start.
Auburn's at Florida, a matchup of top 10 teams. Game Day is going to be there. By the way, SEC Nation picked Tennessee this weekend for the Georgia game, which is interesting.
Oh, they didn't pick Tennessee.
No, they picked – they're there. They're going to be,
gotcha.
They're gonna be on
like,
site.
Wow, that is an upset.
I am on the Auburn bandwagon.
Me too.
And I'm picking them to win this game 26-23. I just think that Malzahn's got that team running the ball pretty well, and they got the freshman quarterback Nix, but I think they go into the swamp and get the W. Well, by the way, they got that HBO 247 show of the Gamecocks. Gamecocks. I was thinking Spurrier. No, the Gators. Spurrier made an appearance on this show, which was filmed during the Towson week, which is not like the best behind-the-scenes deal, I would assume. But you going to be watching that?
No.
All right.
It hadn't aired yet?
No, it aired yesterday. I haven't seen it
yet. Oh, I was going to say, what did old Steve have to say? I'm even more confident in Auburn than you are. I think they're going to go down there and beat them. I think I had my score prediction of about 34-24. I just and what is it about Malzahn? And every other year, it just seems like they play for him or something. Because last year, he's going to get fired. People said he said, they better not fire me now on the sideline or whatever against Georgia. And now, which I don't think that's what he said, but if you go YouTube, it looks like something like, they can't fire me now. I can't remember. But it seems like every other year he puts together a squad that it's just, you know, a team to beat.
All right. See whose picks turn out better. And I think you have to like Friday, 3 o'clock maybe. I don't know.
Sometime. You have a Friday game on the list, I believe. So,
oh, do I?
I believe so.
Right, well, anyway, I think there's a 3 o'clock deadline every Friday or some kind of deadline Friday.
Yeah, UCF Cincy, I believe it's Friday night.
Check out. Go online and make your picks. You can find that. I think there's a contest button or something online. You can find it.
OnlineAthens.com/contest.
Oh, there you go. You don't even need a button then. All right. That's the podcast. And we'll leave you with this reminder that Zaxby's, with hand-breaded chicken, fresh-made salads, and sauces from mild to wild. Stop by today. Zaxby's.